Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Webcology here on WMR.FM. It's the 3rd of April, 2025. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls.
Hey, everybody.
And it's been a slower week on the political front and a very busy week on the tech front, which is kind of cool for Webcology because we get to talk about a lot of tech stuff, which, you know, opens my geeky little heart. Before we go anywhere, I want to thank our sponsors, Audience Key and Wix Studio. And while we're talking about Wix Studio, kind of sad news from Wix Studio. Morty Oberfeld, the great Morty, is moving on from Wix, opening his own shop.
Yeah, he is. I mean, I know I'm excited for his new shop. He's working with brand marketing, things of that nature. But yeah, he's leaving. And if people are new to the industry or haven't been around for a while, there was a time when Wix would like try to bait SEOs with these SEO contests to see who could rank better, Wix or SEO, like in their own sites. And it didn't really work well for Wix. So Morty came in as kind of the unifier of the SEO industry towards Wix, and he did a very, very good job of rebranding basically what Wix did with the SEO community. And then we all got to be pretty good friends because the whole team up at Wix is really, I think everyone likes everyone there. And, we all go hang out together at the conferences. And so, but he is moving on to his brand strategy consultancy called Unify Brand Marketing. So
good for him. Morty Oberstein was probably, honest to goodness, he took Wix when people in the SEO community had no respect for Wix whatsoever. And you just really, it was like watching erosion work in real time, where he just kept at it and kept at it and kept at it. And people started, you know, using the tool. And as it turns out, and incidentally, Wix was radically improving its product. And yeah, now Wix is a...
I recommend it sometimes now.
So, yeah, it's a awesome. Very, very viable website development platform.
Yeah, I say sometimes only because most of my clients need bigger, you know, like they have enterprise level and stuff like that. But if this is any, if Morty is listening, this is any indication of how much he'll be missed. There's already 228 comments on LinkedIn.
Morty has made huge contributions to the SEO community in the last five years beyond his work with Wix. Wix gave Morty a platform to develop his own brand as well as working on the Wix brand, and he's done a remarkable job of it.
He really has. So we'll still see him around because he's still in the industry. He just won't be with Wix. But if you do need someone who can help you with brand strategy, as someone who turned around the Wix brand with the SEO community, he'd probably be a really good one to go to.
Well, I would think so. And wasn't Morty talking about brands and brand strategy like over a year, year and a half, 2 years ago, seeing where Google's going right now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's been talking about it for some time. And he also helped a lot internally at Wix, like helping to rewrite SEO documents and getting that underway. George Nugent took that over, but he was the originator, I believe. And then there's Crystal Carter, who's still there. If you know Crystal, she's amazing. And I think at this point, she'll probably be the contact for the time being until they replace Morty. But Morty, we will miss you at Wix for sure. If you're
Morty
listening.
Morty Oberstein, good luck wherever you go, bro. You're going to do amazing. You have a community that really cherishes you.
And we will have him back on here in the near future. to talk
Yeah,
about
you know,
brands.
actually, I'm really curious to talk brands with him in light of what's happening at Google, but we'll get to that in a few
Yeah.
in a little
Well,
bit.
and outside the constraints of a, you know, it's not his deal, so he can say whatever he wants about brands. That would be very interesting.
Oh, indeed. Yeah, actually, you know, last time we talked to him, he was our sponsor after all. Yeah. Yeah. Now we can say whatever we want to him, right? Yeah. Okay. Moving along. There's a new documentary out, Twitter, Breaking the Bird. A look at how well, disturbing ideological dogma kind of acted like a shotgun, taking down Twitter.
Yeah, it's a the documentary basically follows them like through the early days of Silicon Valley and when they were, you know, trying to change the world into what we've become now.
Well,
And
it's kind of a look at ideologies as they evolved from 2005 to this point, eh?
yeah, and it's a lot of interviews with former Twitter employees from the early days, and even when talking about in the early days how the founders were reluctant to censor abuse, so. It should be really interesting. It's do we know where you can see it yet? It's described as a disturbing ideological dogma. A movie about that.
No, I'm sorry. I assumed it was on streaming services. It's out
I'm
there.
gonna guess too. Yeah, it doesn't say actually in the article where you can see it, but you'll be able to see it soon. So it should be interesting. Called Breaking the Bird.
Okay, so Google Biz is broken down. It's still broken down.
Our weekly story. What is this? What did you call it?
Well, it's just like London Bridge, right? I mean, if you can remember the
Yeah.
mnemonic, London Bridge is falling down. Well, you know, Google Biz is broken down.
Again, this week, as always. This
My
is a
fair
different one.
lady, over and over and over again. So, Google Business profile bug keeps resurfacing. Old fake re with keeps resurfacing old removed reviews, old fake reviews. So those reviews keep popping up. It's like you're playing whack-a-mole. Well, the game's
Yeah.
rigged against you. It's a bug.
Yeah. So Stefan Sombora, a Google product expert, said, "You had fake reviews removed from your business profile. Now see them returning. Sometimes several years later, Google just acknowledged this as a bug. So it will get fixed when, who knows? Because it's Google business." So.
So, our advice is to go to the Google review and as a reply, write, "This is a bug. This is
Yeah.
only a bug. If this was a real review, I'd be angry about it, but I'm not," or something pithy like that. Trust me, your customers will understand and they won't be turned off at all.
Not at all.
That's all. I mean, seriously, how many people are going to see reviews that Google knows should have been scrubbed and were
How do they
scrubbed?
come back?
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's there's bugs, and then there's bugs that really hurt people.
There's bugs and there's bugs that should have been caught in QA testing.
Yeah.
This is one of those. So more on bugs. Google Business Profiles, your edit was not approved glitch. So apparently there's a glitch where you edit something and it says, and just simple edits, you know, that it wasn't approved. So
You work
it'll
really
be.
hard on this. Like you spend an hour or so, which is a lot of time in the SEO world. And then you get the note, your edit was not approved.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah, so they haven't confirmed it as a bug, but everyone's pretty sure it's a bug. So I imagine it'll be fixed at some point, we think. This is Google business, you never know.
Well,
I know I'm
I
just
mean, it
laughing, but
will be
it's
fixed at
true.
one point, just how long it takes to get there. I mean, it will
What?
happen eventually. It's an infinite universe, right?
Exactly. Wasn't one of our stories like 2 weeks ago that's been going on and off for a year? And this dog just
Well,
went.
but you see, there's
Different bug.
definitely a universe in which we report that Google Business is working all fine. And if we can just get our quantum chips working properly, we can meld these universes and fix Google Business, or maybe just like have AI just rewrite the whole thing over and over and over again until it gets it right. It's
Yeah.
very frustrating. It is just so frustrating because it's like, we report on bugs sometimes as in a funny tone because, oh my God, Google's screwing up again, right? But this is actually people's businesses, lives, times,
Yes.
hours, and frustration.
Sometimes you just have to laugh so you don't cry. Because we
Yeah.
report on multiple Google business bugs every week. That's why I moved it to the top as an announcement because there's so many bugs. Sounds like maybe Google should take like a little of that money they have, you know, just a little bit, and like do a whole, you know, check of the system, because there's so many bugs.
Well, yeah, you
so.
know that money that you're not allowed to give Apple anymore? Instead of giving it
Yeah,
to your
exactly.
lawyers to be allowed to give it to Apple, give it to
Our
some of your
developers and
programmers
QA people.
to make you better than Apple, you know?
Exactly. There you go.
Okay. This is, I think, a story of some sort or another. We're going to be reporting on layoffs a lot moving into the future. And this one's a little bit
Yeah.
different. This is more hubris than economic, but Automattic, Matt Mullenweg's commercial side of WordPress,
WordPress, yeah.
terminated 16% of its workforce the other day, citing productivity and the need for financial capacity to invest back into the company.
Sure. Oh, who knows with him? There's a restructuring and that announcement from Matt. If you haven't followed the Matt drama, it's been going on for over a year with WordPress. So this time, he said in his restructuring announcement, "I've had to make difficult decisions to protect Automattic's long-term future. This post will outline where the changes are happening and the next steps in our organizational restructuring. I wish to be transparent and acknowledge immediately that this will be difficult news to hear. We will do everything to ensure all automaticians, I can't say that word, those
Automaticians.
staying,
That's a good word,
right?
sure.
It is such a terrible thing. Those staying and leaving are supported. They're making the changes to become more agile and responsive, break down silos that have created inefficiencies, focus on product quality, doing fewer things better, and share a viable financial model for the long-term success."
Okay, so let's translate that into going to war is expensive and has consequences.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And what they say they're doing for the employees is giving them a comprehensive package covering severance pay and benefits, retention of company laptops, job placement resources, pretty much standard when you get laid off.
The frustrating thing here is WordPress had an incredible ecosystem where lots of people were making money. Now, there might have been a few companies, a handful of companies that were making substantial amounts of money, one of which was Automattic. But there was a whole ecosystem of people making a living off of WordPress, enabling WordPress, designing for WordPress, making plugins for WordPress, etc. And then Mullenweg comes and blows a lot of it up. So, honest to goodness, these are the consequences. Now Atomic's suffering for it, and his workers have to suffer because of that. I understand the restructuring and agility and all that, but you know what? This ain't about that. This is just what they're saying it's about. This is about they blew up their company and now they're facing the consequences of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know right now where the status is, that we haven't seen news of it in a little bit. I'll have to go look it up. But the idea of creating a second WordPress fork and then, you know, moving people away from Mullenweg's control.
Well, that's still out
So,
there. Absolutely, that's still out there. And I'd be,
yeah.
I'm sur I mean, I'd be surprised if within 6 months we didn't hear about an Addison platform that was coming along to do just that. I mean,
Yeah,
we
exactly.
know people are working on it. Just if they're actually going to succeed or not is the question.
So those people are all looking for jobs right now. So if you see someone from Automattic Workforce, no, they were not terminated for any cause, just slimming down the company to compete with the disaster that he created. So,
Okay.
yeah.
So
So
Elon
this,
Musk
oh,
is,
before you move on,
are we
before you
moving
move
on?
on.
There's more, but wait, there's more.
Yeah. Right, there's more. There was one. We did have one story with a political touch today. The Doge group, the ones that have been, you know, just running ransacked through the federal government. Well, don't know that this will pass. It'll require some Republicans get on board, three to be exact. But a Democrat did put a bill in today that would restrict their ability to spend any money on Doge. Like Doge's funding would completely go away because Congress controls the purse. Anyone at Doge would also be drug tested, including Musk. So just, you know.
Hey, a lot of those guys studied all night for that test.
Well, you know, and he's publicly admitted multiple times about his drug use, so it's like, so anyways, it's Representative Mickey Sherrill from New Jersey, and she has put this forth this bill, and hopefully it'd be great if it got passed. I mean, difficult to see it get passed, but At least somebody is attempting to rein them in. Congress does control the purse, and so Congress at any time could stop what's going on, but it requires at least three Republicans to do that, and so far that has not occurred. So just a little good news, might be able to stop the Doji boys.
You know what, the damage that has been done is so
It's
substantial.
terrible.
I really hope that it can be stopped. But we'll see. Again, we'll have to see what that all looks like moving forward, because I have no clue. I just hope that they don't further damage the ability of technologists and innovators to truly make a better world.
Well, and they did, so people are aware, they did fire 10% of, I believe it was the CDC yesterday. It's hard to keep track on the dates and the percentages, but it was a very large amount of the top people at that agency. So, like people that helped with COVID response are gone, people that manage bird flu, like the best experts in the world on bird flu, measles, Alzheimer's, you name the disease that we're studying, controlling, or monitoring, they've all been fired. So all those people were at the very top, the best scientists in the world, the best academics. So it's not like the lab tech that they fired, they probably fired a bunch of them too. They fired the knowledge and the know-how. So that will cost us greatly in the future. So anyway,
Yep, moving along.
moving along.
Elon Musk is going to have to face a fraud lawsuit over disclosure or lack thereof of his stake in Twitter. Musk has been trying to dodge a suit claiming he's defrauded former Twitter shareholders by waiting too long to disclose his initial investment in Twitter that he's now changed over to X. He,
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
he has to face a fraud lawsuit now, because I guess other shareholders in Twitter felt they stood a chance to block him had they only known what he was going to do next after having spent months bragging about what he was going to do.
You know why this makes me happy? I actually watched him do it on Twitter that night when he was doing it. He was tweeting about it. So I was watching him do this, and the next day found out what he did was illegal. I was like, did anyone not notice? Because he posted about it. So yeah, you're not allowed to take I believe it's over 10%. I have the number wrong. When you're buying shares of a company, once you get to a certain percentage, and it's fairly low, it's 10% or less. You have to inform the shareholders that you're doing it because it's a hostile takeover of the company. And he did not. And he went up to, I believe it was like 15% share at the time, could be higher. It's been a while since I refreshed my brain on those specific stats, but it was around that. And so he triggered the you must tell people and didn't tell people. And now has been fighting this in court for a long time, obviously, and has now been told he will have to face the lawsuit. He cannot get out of the lawsuit,
Okay,
which I
well,
think is good. It's accountability.
I just want to mention though, accountability can sometimes take a very, 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 very long time to account for itself. For
And the U.S.
instance,
courts, 2 years, not so bad. But the next story, yeah, really long time.
if you or anybody you know used AdWords between January 1st, 2004, and December 13th, 2012, you may be eligible for a claim to over 100 million to settle an old lawsuit on clicks outside of the geo-targeted area. Now, before you get all excited, I want you to remember that the lawyers are going to get like 33%, and there is 4.2 million of the 100 million set aside for like expenses and stuff.
And then
But
it's going to go to like 100 million people.
yeah, well, then it goes
That's
to as
one of
many
you.
people as are claiming they
You get
used
that. You get
at.
that form where it's like, did this happen to you? Were you using Google Ads and da da da? And you go, sure. And you get like the $5. Maybe that's a big check. You might get a 20-cent check later. That's what happens there.
Yeah, but you may be eligible for a piece of the $100 million that Google is putting out on this. The case is called Cabrera et al. Versus Google LLC, U.S. Northern District Court, Northern District of California, number 11-01263. Again, if you're using that, if you use AdWords between January 1st, 2004 and December 13th, 2012, you might be eligible for a piece of the settlement.
Now, Google has denied doing anything wrong and said this case was about ad product features we changed over a decade ago, and we're pleased it's resolved. And yes, we did it. We just settled because we're tired of being in court.
There you go.
OpenAI
Okay. Surprise, surprise. OpenAI's O3 model might actually cost, this is the one that apparently can reason. It might cost more to run than they thought it would. We're looking at maybe a staggering $30,000 per
per
task. They
task.
originally thought it was about 3,000 to solve major problems, but now it's looking close more like 30 grand to solve large scale problems.
Yeah, per task. Anyway, yeah, they believe it's got it's closer to the true O3 cost, and the 30,000. I mean, O1 Pro is closer to the true O3 cost, according to Mike Anoop, the president and co-founder of the ARC Prize Foundation, who did this work. So yeah, so it's 10 times more expensive than they thought. Put that at scale.
Well, again, for what it's worth, these are for large scale problems. This is, we're not talking about writing your or cheating on your PhD thesis, or even writing an accurate weather report. We're talking about, like, solving large scale problems. So, for what that's worth, most of us won't be using O3, but if you are, it's going to cost you. This one scares me. I don't even know the story. For listeners, for what it's worth, we have a research division named Christine who searches for stories ahead of the show and puts them into a grid, and then I come along and just voice them really. And this one really scares me
Why does this one scare you?
because it's a merge of Tinder and
Yes.
OpenAI's new flirt bot. And now, for the record, I've never used Tinder in my life. I've had the same partner for over a decade now, and I have no clue what Tinder is like or how it's used. But I do know a common complaint in the dating world is many of the characters in the dating world aren't actually real. They're just bait to get people into the dating app world.
Yeah, Tinder has a certain reputation, but it depends on where you live. Like, I live in Las Vegas, and it lives up to that reputation. I think I tried it for 24 hours once, and I was like, oh, okay, these people are only interested for one thing, and they're usually not local. But some people I know met significant others on there, so it really just depends on the environment. But this is Tinder's. I should try one of your voices. Tinder's limited time only open AI power feature called the game. Let's users practice their flirting with eerily realistic chatbots and funny scenarios. The bot responds to a user's voice and then gives them a ranking on a three flame tier and co with constructive feedback. But of course, a journalist had to ruin it all. And they went and tested it and found out it kind of creepy. So,
Shortly
yeah.
before the flirt bot ghosted the journalist and never called him again.
Exactly. Yeah, it's an article worth reading. It's at Fortune. I tried Tinder and OpenAI's new flirt bot, and one aspect was eerie and unnerving. It really said it's not really meant to be a blueprint on how to flirt. Humans are much more complicated, and connections are much more nuanced. Then the game is more about helping people feel comfortable expressing themselves and delivering a formula for success. So, he said it's very responsive. To his poor attempts at flirting, he attempted to flirt poorly on purpose, but it was unnervingly realistic, and the way it reacted to his pickup lines and the supposed authenticity of his statements. There is a recent studies, Jim, you may not be aware of these because they're not on our grid today, but that people that interact regularly with these kind of like not a flirty chatbot, but one that voices with you, actually often makes them more depressed and more sad. And that these, of course, can often go off to the beaten path to the very wrong direction. So, but anyway, apparently on Tinder, you can test your flirting with a bot. And his bot was called Swoonbot.
Soon bought.
Swoonbot.
A good name. Okay.
Yeah.
OpenAI and other image generators are so good at generating images that they're now able to generate, I don't know, bill of sale receipts that are so accurate that they can fool retail storekeepers.
They can.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess this is a refund scam.
Really is. And if to anyone who reads this and goes, "Oh, I'll do that," just remember it is theft. You can be charged for it if the theft is of a certain amount, depending on your state. I probably don't want to do that. But if you are a store owner, especially my parents had a small business for 20 years, ran always on the margins. You want to be aware of this and make sure that you have. No, some identifier, maybe it's on the back of your receipt or something that shows that it is a receipt that came from you. So someone doesn't come into your employee during the day and get a refund on something that they never purchased.
Yeah, there has to be some sort of watermark or some sort of safety. Again, like you said, on the reverse is a smart idea. On the reverse of the ticket is a smart idea. Eventually, there's going to be some way to determine what is and is not a real receipt or an image of a receipt. But as of now, well, merchants beware.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's all sorts of little details in the receipt, but if you put it on something with a watermark on the back, it's just easier because your employee can just look and say, "Oh, it doesn't have our watermark. It's not ours." So, but yes,
So,
beware.
OpenAI is trying to use the court system to bend or reform copyright rules. It's trying to use a fairly significant lobby in Congress, a fairly significant set of contributions during the election to try to get around copyright rules so it has new stuff to train on legally. But there's a study out there that strongly suggests that they aren't actually waiting for permission. They're just going ahead and doing it, and understanding the court really can only find them afterwards.
Yeah, and this story comes from the Register, and apparently it comes out of a situation where O'Reilly Books, if you're in the tech industry, you know O'Reilly Books, OpenAI mined the publisher's house copyrighted protected tomes for training data, embedded all into its top-tier GPT-4 model without permission. So we're still in this modern time, still taking things without permission or compensation. You think they would have stopped
This
that by now?
strikes a little closer to home. How many people do you know personally who've written for O'Reilly?
Quite a few.
A dozen at least.
Yeah.
And if they're from my SEO career, easily a dozen people who've specifically written a textbook for O'Reilly, and all of their material has been hoovered and, is being repurposed. And it makes you question two things. One, the value of the book itself now. And two, the value of that person's, how to say this, that person's opinion in the book, 100% solid. That person's opinion in the AI generative response that's been taken out of the book, probably pretty solid, but not guaranteed anymore.
Exactly. And so people know how this tested it, how they test it. They ask questions of the model, right? And they perform something called a DCOP, DECOP, inference attack described in a 2024 paper. This is in the article. But basically, they just gave a string of multiple choice questions, rated how they answered it. And often they came back with the exact text that they had lifted. And they used something called an area under the receiver operating characteristic score, an AROC. The higher the figure, the more likelihood that the neural network was trained on the passages from the 34 books they tested from at 50% or better. So they're getting better also at proving the theft. Remember in the past how they got a prompt engineer to kind of prompt it out of it, and then OpenAI like accused the New York Times of like doing something nefarious, and it's like they just used a prompt engineer, but now they actually have ways of actually measuring the amount of copyright, which also says, people, if you think Google can't detect you, use AI content. But anyway, we'll go back to the next thing. So there are going, looks like they're going to court for that probably. But they want to ban the
But
copyright
again,
for,
even if they go to court,
yeah.
OpenAI and the other LLMs are still going to run roughshod over the whole concept of copyright, and they're going to beg you to punish them for it later.
And they have a really good defense. Not that I like the defense, but I mean legally a defense. Once it goes into the model, it can't come out without destroying the model. So then OpenAI can argue it would be too cost, just, you know, it costs them too much to undo what they did.
So if I throw this baby into the wood chipper, it's
Oh.
okay. Forget the analogy that
How
thing fell
about
apart the moment I
a
started saying it.
banana into the wood chipper?
No, baby is much more interesting. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about somebody who might actually do such things. Elon Musk has sold XAI. I'm sorry, has sold Twitter. Has sold X Twixter. To XAI, the owner operator of Grok, which may well be the most honest AI out there, weirdly enough.
No, just ask it about Musk. It tells you lots of things.
Well,
Not good.
no. You know what? Grok is anti-fascist.
Well,
Is straight up
interesting.
anti-fascist. Grok does not like fascism, and it's the weirdest dichotomy. Musk is a fascist. His invention, Grok, obviously read the right books. And it now owns Twixter.
Yeah.
Which probably means if you're on Twixter, you know how they say if it's free, you're the product? Even if you're buying your check mark, you're still the product. And well, you're getting grokked. Definitely getting grokked.
Well, let's also put, and it was a story this morning that doesn't have a lot of detail yet, but he bought it from himself for $33 billion, but it was worth $44 billion when he bought it. And as actually, that price has come back because of the people coming back to advertising. But they're trying to figure out where the $11 billion went that he got from the banks, because that he would have to pay back. So stay tuned for more on that story.
Okay. So speaking of X, if you are on X, you may be one of the 200 million email IDs that were leaked in a massive data breach. 201 million, I'm sorry. A few million between friends. Reported in Mashable, a post on the Hacking Forum breach forums, posted by someone named Thinking One. Suggested that a downloadable 34 gigabyte CSV file packed with, oh my God, packed with over 201 million entities tied to X accounts was stolen and downloaded. A freaking CSV file?
But here's the
Okay.
weird thing. It says the 2 billion accounts in the file, but the headline, the article says 200 million IDs. That must just be just the emails themselves.
Yeah.
So, you know, they tend to do that though. And then they put them up on these sites like Pastebin, and then you can go read the hack. I will tell you what I have on my phone is what's called Look Smart. It's now F Secure. And it does a dark web search for you, and it'll alert you on your phone. Like other, you can get other programs for that, but they don't necessarily alert you on your phone when they find it. So when they find something like that, if you get those notifications, go in and change your passwords. And right now, since we know what they did, you should change your password if you're still using X. I am on X for reasons that are important for myself, research, stuff like that. So go out there and change your X handle, your Twitter handle, if you have one, because 200 million records is a lot, and why wait to find out?
Indeed, and like many people on X, if you do stay there long enough, you may have to seek help. That sounded so much better in my head. Okay, so there's this guy. He's a journalist. His name's Ben Black, and every year he publishes a fake story on April Fool's Day on a tiny little news site that is so small and Welsh. That I can't even pronounce its name.
Yes.
Cymbran Life.
Yes.
Cymbran, Cymbran Life. And every April
Yes.
Fool's Day, this guy, Ben Black, publishes a fake news story because it's April Fool's Day after all.
By the way, you missed an important thing about that city. They are in the Guinness World Records for having the most roundabouts per square kilometer. I
Well,
just have to see a picture.
that's very important. The most roundabouts per square kilometer, and I bet you their people actually understand how to use them.
Yes.
But that's
They,
fake. In 2020,
yeah.
he wrote a story suggesting that it had the most roundabouts per square kilometer, not that its people knew how to use them, which would probably also be equally fake. And here's the thing. He forgot about it. He wrote the story and forgot about it because why would you remember, right? It's not a real thing.
Right.
AI reads everything. And so his story has been coming up in searches about his town.
Well, it's been coming up in the AI
Yeah,
portion.
oh, in the AI, yeah, because this
Yeah.
is stuff that's associated with his town. So he now understands that his town really does have the most roundabouts in a square kilometer, and that the nudist cold water swimming club at a local lake does actually have a new Hollywood style sign guiding people to it, because this is what Google's generative AI is saying about his town. Anyway, there you go. If you ever have to write a
Well,
school report, beware.
we've talked about this before, the snake eating the tail, right? Where's the mathematician and the guy published the critique of the mathematician, and then it became true information, the critique, which was the critique, meaning the stuff that was being written was incorrect. And then on this one, there's a really important quote, I think, from the guy in the town we can't pronounce. And he says it's very frustrating. It's really frustrating because now no one will visit our website. And I think that's it's a really true point about the overviews that we've talked about before, but it's just nice to say it from somebody else who's been affected. So yeah, so it's snake eating tail. They take information from anywhere, they don't have context for it, and then they'll publish the fake information as actual information. Snake eating tail.
So, what do you think Microsoft's done? Microsoft has made Bing Copilot Search is now live. So if you're using Bing, you will have a easy interface right across the top navigation, in fact, to get to a Copilot response. Cool thing. You're being given the opportunity to click on Copilot rather than it just coming up. But frequently, it's going to come up anyway if Microsoft thinks it's the right thing to put in to improve your search results. So
Yeah, and
there you
they
go.
have and they have the Copilot search that's live, which is like just like AI mode, I think, for Google.
And what that, you know, that I think that's them doing basically a prefetch and then serving up results based on that. I mean, that really your AI, your Copilot search at Microsoft, it's a Microsoft search.
Yeah, the thing is that I see people, and this is just a little sidebar, but I see people in the industry. What do we call it? Generative experience? Do we call it? No, it's SEO and it's still the search because they're all summarization engines. Every single large language model uses a search engine to bring back a bunch of articles and then summarize from them. So if you want to appear in there, we've talked about this before, make sure your SEO, whatever engine you're trying to appear in, is good for that search
You know,
engine that runs inside it.
I'm gonna say this once because it's mostly free form and I haven't really thought through it enough to really say it, but there is a way to write content that LLMs and AIs are more likely to pick it up, but it's not in the way you write the content. It's just that you provide so damn much of it and make it good and new and interesting. But honest to goodness, the way to get noticed by AI, and in my experience, I've got this one e-com that is just providing so much information on every aspect of any product is described. We've been doing this for a couple of years now. It's been a strategy for a few years, not because of AI and LLMs, by the way, because I thought this was what they needed to do to sell their products. And oh my God, Google is loving it. And we're getting tons of responses, references from OpenAI, from Gemini, from Perplexity, etc. But we're also doing really well after the most recent algorithm update, the core update, and I think it had a lot to do with favoring content that was going to be favored and used to ground AI overview responses.
Yes,
So,
exactly. And that's why
the
your
way to do
best
it,
AI.
bomb them with tons of content. Just give them everything you could possibly give them, and they'll like you for it.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean, I don't think Jim means like write 2,000 pages on soup. It means
Oh, no,
like
no, no. Make
provide
it, make it,
wide,
make it.
diverse, compelling content on a topic.
It has to be viable. There has to be a reason for it to be there. You're not just writing for the sake of it. Indeed.
Yes.
Okay, somehow we got to that because of a Bing Copilot search. You will succeed in it. I honest to goodness, you can. But you just have to work twice as hard. That's a funny thing about this universe, eh? All these, it's so much easier with AI and stuff. It does all the work for us, but you have to work twice as hard to get it to work for you. I kind of want to jump to the Google brand ranking system story. I love this story.
Yeah, you love it.
I do love it because it's so true. Okay, so last week at Google or at New York Search Central Live New York, a number of Google's spokespersons, not just Danny, but really Danny specifically, talked about brands and talked about the bigness of brands and all that sort of stuff, and may have left people with the impression that Google is big brand focused only. That's not
Not
true.
true. Yeah. No, not true.
Oh, sorry, yeah, go for it. Go for it, please.
Oh, no. I was agreeing with you. It's not true. A lot of times, he has one statement, very short, sort of great article on SEO Roundtable with a lot of quotes from Danny and links. So you're going to want to go read this. We can't cover all that. But he has a great statement in here. And he says, because he mentioned brand and he was talking, in public. And you know how you and I, when we speak, sometimes you say something and you go, oh, crud. I should have said it that way because now people are going to think the wrong thing. That's what happened. But so he's trying to clarify. So he says, what I was talking about in my remarks is there are all these things that people try to research to find and that make them go, look, brand equal better rankings. That's not a surprising correlation, he puts in quotes, but it's not the same as Google calculates your brand and gives you X percent brand boost. Basically, what he's saying is there's no such thing as a brand metric. Brands just are bigger and they have more content and more links and they have more presence online and they're mentioned more and that's why.
Brands have bigger everything.
Yeah.
Think of it like objects in space, like gravity, okay? A brand is a bigger gravitational object. It pulls more stuff, more energy towards it. And by nature, Google's going to respond to that effect, to that bigger object effect. There's more links, there's more content, there's more structure, there's more topics, and they
More
tend to be more
presence.
professionally focused.
Yeah.
In short, brand is just a much bigger bowling ball in the blanket, and it's just making a bigger hole for Google Energy to fall into, and that pulls everything up in the rankings.
Yeah, and I can tell you from a nonprofit, I can't say the nonprofit I'm working with, but that started 3 months ago. They had over 500,000 site visits, all organic, this month in 3 months. Right, from nothing to 3 months, but they have a they're getting to be known as a brand in their space really quickly because of all sorts of just organic opportunities, lives that they've done, things that they've written, Substack that they put up, but their presence is everywhere and it's getting picked up by a lot of people, and so they're being recognized as a brand in this space. So the more that they're recognized that way, the better they do. But it's not because Google has a brand score. It's because, it's getting legitimate links. It's got legitimate content. It's got legitimate people talking about it. Because that's also part of being a brand, right? Google can see that people are talking about you and they don't give you a ranking score for that, but it does make you much more legitimate. So, and then of course the link structures, we have to talk about that. The internal link, the inbound links to a major brand will help them with a lot of things that might hurt a smaller one. You got 10 million links from, all the other biggest brands in the world. You're going to do much better, even if everything else on your site was difficult, not done well. So,
A
as long
quick
as it
thing,
can
a
index
quick,
it.
A quick thing for SEOs, whenever you're dealing with a brand's page, you are going to have a lot more links. You're going to have a lot better internal link structure. But I can guarantee you this, every time you're also going to have a lot more orphaned pages. Pages that are really important, they exist and they're accessible via the sitemap or possibly via a link off of an external page, but they're not in the internal site structure for some reason or another. Who knows why? It happens every large scale page out site I work on. Look out for those guys and carve them back in again, and they will do really well.
Yeah, very true. And just one final quick one. I was working for USA.gov, which is the public website for the GSA in the United States. GSA is like one of the biggest government agencies, or was, I don't know right now. And we were doing 4th of July information for people. It's like the public site to get information about things the national federal government does. And they had like 30,000 visits the year before for the weekend of July 4th. And then I was the only SEO they've ever heard of, and I optimized it, and we got into the Google Doodle for July 4th, and we went from like 12th to 3rd. And that all happened in the course of a few days because they had crawled us so much. And then we got 160,000 visits. And that's the power of being a brand like that, because even though it's government, it's still brand, it's
Oh,
government
yeah.
brand,
And it's
and
very.
had so much, yeah, so much power. That those little changes made a very quick difference in the amount of traffic that would never happen on a small, tiny site. But the links that they had coming into that site were astronomical. And I know that helped quite a bit. Plus, the backlog
So
helped.
it's not favoritism, it's just how the machine works.
Yeah, just feeding the algorithms better.
Okay, Google AI Overviews is testing a check important info disclaimer. So this is happening on both desktop and mobile search results. And when you see an AI overview, that you may see a disclaimer that reads "Check important info." How that plays out, I don't know. How accurate the fact check is, I don't know. But it's a good thing. I'm glad to see it.
Yeah, it's not, it's just in a test mode, so most people will not have this yet. We'll see what happens if they decide to roll it out, but that's why we're like, I don't know. I don't know, because we can't test it right now. But it does seem like a good expansion to AI overview, so we'll see how it goes.
This is going to annoy me to no end. But Google is going to allow the double serving of ads at different locations on the same page. So you can see the same ad over and over and over again as you scroll through a page. Now, I know that already happens sometimes, and that's not supposed to actually happen. But now it's going to happen far more frequently. And I don't know, my ADD riddled mind is just going to go crazy because of this.
This why? I guess I get double the money. But do I really need to see the ad twice on a Google search page?
Well, you know what? If it's worth it for just to devil's advocate, why not? The advertiser's paid for it.
Yeah, but it just doesn't really serve anybody. And this happens all the time on websites, by the way. I'll tell the client, you know, when you go to your site, those five ads you have, they're all the same ad. What? It shouldn't be the same ad. They are. It's annoying. You scroll down the page, you're like, this
Oh,
is the first time I've seen the ad. I get it. You're selling this thing.
I find it endlessly distracting. And it's almost
Yeah, me
like
too.
your eye plays a trick on you and you think you're at the same spot in the article, but you're not.
True. Very true.
I had the other day I had a really aggressive face follow me around a page. It was so aggressive that I couldn't actually read the article. This
Oh,
is that this
no.
just this one ad this one face that they used was just so aggressive looking. I reload the page, scroll down a little bit, there's the guy again. Very frustrating.
Speaking, by the way, of double serving, we skipped over one article real quick. It's Google ranking Reddit AI translated pages too well
Yeah.
in Reddit. Yeah. So, you know, apparently it will rank the English version and then also the translated version when you click into it. So it'll look like it's, yeah. I'm not explaining this well because it's hard to
So
explain.
you could have
Okay.
two versions of the same article, one and
Yeah.
two, but one of them is the English version, the other is the translated version.
Exactly. It's just kind of odd since, you know, it's an English page, probably, you know, the translated version isn't going to be better. So anyways, there's a whole bunch of URLs showing up that way. No one knows for sure if it's a bug or if it's real. But if you're seeing double serving of Reddit pages, it's because they are showing the translated, like French version or translated German version, in the same slot on the page.
Let's be honest here. If you're seeing double copies of Reddit posts in Google SERPs, it's because Google's hoovering the entire damn board to train itself.
Oh, sure, 100%. Yeah,
That's
totally.
the real answer
Yeah,
here.
100%. And no one put in a block saying, hey, if it says translate to French, don't show this page when you already have English there. So,
Now,
anyways,
at the
I'm gonna
same
get
time,
going.
Google. Your ability to read JSON files is staggering. Thank you so much. I can't tell you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And again, thank you. Like, I'm serious. Have you seen the JSON phenomena?
No, I don't. I'm not working with sites right now that are heavily relying on JSON.
I'm just I'm having a very good week.
Very
I
good.
really,
That's
really am.
awesome.
The crawl rate is phenomenal, and the information that they're getting, I don't need a pre-render server right now in this one trouble site anymore. Google's actually reading off of the site that it was never able to read before.
Nice. Yeah,
I'm just
JSON's
so
a good.
pleased.
Oh, yay. That's great.
Okay,
This is
so
not so great. This is from the not so great. Column.
oh yeah, okay, so Google is now 100% generating publication pages with AI.
Yeah. Following our announcement April 2024 last year, Google News is fully transitioning to automatically generated publication pages in late March 2025. Changes to seek to improve our existing publisher workflow and simplify our current product experience. To achieve this, all publication pages in Google News will be generated automatically. Google News will no longer use RSS feeds or web locations that were submitted in Publisher Center. As a result, publication pages that were created by publishers manually will no longer appear to users in Google News. Some publications may not have an automatically generated landing page. This is a quote from Google and Search Engine Roundtable. And it says Publisher Center will discontinue non-essential customization features for public pages. It's too many Ps. Publication pages in Google News, and the Google News tile will no longer appear in the Publisher Center. So they added three new sections of content to this document about this topic in the help document for publications. Google distribution settings. You'll need to read this. We don't have time to go over all these, but text-to-speech distribution options on Google Assistant, and then video news on Google News and Google Assistant. So for video news, publishers will no longer be able to use Publisher Center to submit YouTube content for consideration in Google News or Google Assistant. So they're just automating it all. I don't think that's a good thing. I've seen a lot of negatives with their mod the moderation they've already done with automation. But what do you think, Jim?
Honestly, first, Google News has been compiled by algorithm as long as Google News has existed. So human hands haven't really touched the composition in a very long time. So I'm not so concerned with lack of context and lack of editorial oversight because that's been going on forever anyway. What I am concerned about is Google News losing or reframing the context of something because the AI or LLM didn't fully understand or maybe tried to apply too many understandings of a story and completely flubbed what the story was actually about. I'm very concerned about that.
I'm also concerned about the fact that they took away the ability for the publisher to control parts of their publication. So, like in the global distribution center setting, you can't control where you restrict your content from appearing in certain countries. And if you are in countries where your publication's views aren't welcome and you no longer can restrict that, that could be problematic.
Although that is probably something Google will give you a toggle, perhaps some power over. Although in the end of the day, if content is being pulled from your publication and used to compile generative answers, it's pretty hard to see how you can block those from going one place or another.
There is one exception to this, by the way. New showcase panels, those people can still block by content, by the publisher center. But basically, the publisher center is just taking away the ability to control what you put in there, like having the RSS feed, and having topics or subpages in your site being given to Google. So they're just going to automate all that. I think that's where the negative comes in.
Speaking of negatives, here's a story that really, really spooks me, really scares me. So this is, I mean, again, this seems like it is so convenient. And in many ways, I bet you it is so convenient, but this is definitely a argument looking for its own proof sort of thing. So Google is adding a new feature to its Notebook LM that is going to allow the AI note-taking tool to go out and find its own web sources to summarize and narrate any statement you might make. So I'm sitting here writing about how the world is flat, and I go hit discover, and like Google's gonna go out and find a bunch of ways to source my statement, and I bet you they could too. This is scary. I'm sorry. This is for 99.9% of the people who use this responsibly. I could see this being quite useful. For that other 0.01%, oh my God, these guys are gonna run amok.
Yeah, and also, to be honest, this whole idea of summarizing, again, here's my objection to it. It's just a very human personal one. But when I go to write something, I spend a couple weeks researching it, going down the rabbit holes, learning all the nuances, learning all the arguments and the counter arguments. And then when I'm done, I write an article. If
And
someone
you're
is
way better
summarizing,
prepared to write that article.
exactly, and talk about it and to deliver it in speeches because I know the topic now. If all you do is have something go out and find you sources and summarizes them and narrates them for you, how often at that point are you learning anything? Because you're really not. You're not learning the arguments and the tenets. You're like getting a summary, which means a lot is omitted, right? So I would strongly suggest to anybody who values their ability to logic through problems to not use this kind of tech unless you're just using it to get an idea of where to start. Because if you're using it for the final product, that means you really didn't learn about the topic. And that means you're not going to be able to answer the questions people will have for you because you never logicked it out in the first place. Also, not good for your brain, but that's another story.
Back when I was a kid, we used to have an aphorism, something we would just say to each other. And it was never trust anybody over 30. And that's because they had a different agenda than we kids had. They totally had a different agenda. They wanted to be responsible adults, and we wanted to be dumb kids. Never trust anybody over 30. Well, I think in the new information age, we might want to change that a little bit to don't trust anybody under 20. Because, like, there's a high likelihood they don't know what they're talking about.
I have seen it used. I'm helping this nonprofit interview some people, right? And they're going to bring someone on board. And I said, please let me check their skill set. And they had this marketing plan, right? And they put up the marketing plan. I could instantly recognize it was ChatGPT formatted. And I was like, yeah, their plan isn't their plan. Their plan is there from ChatGPT. Well, what happens when they get into that job? They don't know how to do it. And then I went and looked at their socials and all that sort of stuff, and they did not have a skill set. So it's like, yeah, it can help you on the surface, but whether you're doing research or whether you're applying for work or whatever you're using it for, but when you get into the depths of it, where you're going to be pretty lost because you aren't going to know the depths of the topic. So
Okay, so there you go. If
there you go.
beware of the Discover Source tool, especially if you're arguing that the world is flat.
Yes.
Okay, now we're into the fast stories, and that's not a moment too soon because we are seriously going through time.
Yes, we are. So Google AI summaries are now appearing in local knowledge panels. So they're adding to the knowledge panel on the right-hand side about the summary or report the summary if you don't think it's right, and it's going to summarize the whatever's in the knowledge graph. Could be person, place, or thing. So
Okay.
we'll see how those go.
So we reported a couple of weeks ago that Google is going to be providing ads to Meta and Meta properties, and that they will let Meta people advertising on Meta track and analyze the efficacy of the ads through Google Analytics 4 and through Google Search Console. Well, to further their integration, Google Ads conversion started a goals section where you can set where for WhatsApp messages and Google Ads. So it's called conversion diagnostics. It's a beta feature. Lets you check your diagnostics a lot more regularly to make sure that you're accurately measuring conversions, that you're doing it correctly. But this is the first tool I know of that Google's made for the Meta ecosystem.
Yeah, it really is. I don't think I recall them ever doing that before. Although, as we talked offline, Meta, Facebook has one of the largest data sets that's been untapped for training outside of Meta and Facebook. Basically, users and ads and things like that. So this may be the beginning of getting some of that data through WhatsApp.
Oh, I would have to think so. I mean, it's
Yeah.
just so much juicy information there.
Exactly. So the next one is that Google Workspace email is going to have ETE encryption. That's end-to-end encryption. So end-to-end encryption is really important if you want to make sure nobody can see what you're sending. And that means even Google can't access your inbox, just like Messenger and WhatsApp. Facebook can't access those on their end-to-end encryption messenger systems. And what it is basically you can have encryption, which means I write something, and once it gets into the internet, it's covered in like a bubble, and no one can see it. But the EDE means on your computer leaving, that's it's covered all the way. Now the thing is, if someone has gotten into your system or onto your phone, it is not covered. So we had this conversation with Signal, right? Signal is an ETE encryption, and it allows it so that nobody can see what's being transmitted. Only two people who can see it are the people that started the message and who received the message. But if your actual device, or in this case, your desktop, were to be compromised, they can see it because they can see you write it. They can see what's on your screen. So, but Google's Enterprise is letting people have EDE, which is really good because these are workplace emails. And so now the workspace is going to be protected as well from like other people getting a hold of it, like hackers or competitors and things of that nature.
Yeah, I miss my BlackBerry. I had end-to-end encryption years ago, but it was on a
You were
BlackBerry.
a BlackBerry. Yeah, you were a BlackBerry guy.
I loved Black. I miss my BlackBerry. Okay, we got to keep moving. We're slow pushing
Well,
time.
you're the one talking. Go ahead. I'm teasing you.
Okay, Google's knowledge panel is coming with promotion clippable coupons. So coupons are now in knowledge panel.
Yeah, it's in the right-hand side of the knowledge panel, and it's in a promotions area. And it'll say like get 10% off, and then on the little right side, the little scissors, little dotted line, and an ellipse, and it'll save 10%, like save 10 is the coupon code. You flip it, and then I guess go to the website. I don't know the interaction once you're past there, but that's what it looks like. So there will be coupons there. Yeah.
So, Google Docs has a writer's tool called Help Me Create. It'll kick you over the writer's block hump. It now comes in Spanish, Portuguese, Japanese, Korean, Italian, French, and German. So, if you are using the Help Me Create button in Google Docs, you can now use it in multiple languages.
Yes. And on to Google Search tests indent for vertical bars by title and descriptions. You know, there's like when you're, I think it's in Word, when you're doing like a Word article and you quote something on the left-hand side, it has that little vertical gray bar, right? That's what it looks like. So the title's indented a little with this gray bar, and then the description, I don't really see the purpose for it as I look at it on the website. Maybe just to bring a little more attention to it.
Yeah, but you know what? If it helps me differentiate different parts of the SERPs and makes it easier for my eyes to get f to take in the information I need, knowing this means this means this means this, that's a good thing. If it's just visual noise, not a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. And then moving on to local questions, Google local questions and answers feature is gone. So the local feature that showed questions and answers on local panels is no longer working for most businesses. Google disabled it 100% in India. They were working fine everywhere else. So hard to know for sure if it's a
Maybe
full
it's a
remote.
bug, you know.
Another bug, but or if it's a real removal. But since they removed them in India, it's very possible that they're testing removing them.
Okay.
Yeah. Why?
Okay, so a lot of people leave stuff out. for curbside pickup, but that sounds kind of chunky. So they're now calling it contactless.
Now, see, I like curbside. It's like friendly, and it's like, oh, I'm going to the curbside.
Oh,
Contactless, though,
yeah.
is not accurate because Barry makes a very good point in his article on this at Search Engine Roundtable that when they come, often they give you the bag handed to you in the car. So at that point, it's no longer contactless because you're transferring it, from a person to person.
Why, what does this sound like we're talking about drug dealing?
Right? I get the contactless, but that feels like a pandemic word, not like a post-pandemic word, unless they know something we don't know. But
Well, you know what? Google does, in fact. They can predict a flu outbreak a week before it happens, just based on people's search
true.
results, right?
Yeah, and we no longer have somebody who will warn us of those. So, they could know something we don't know. But I don't like contactless. I just think it makes people have to think, and it's not entirely accurate. Curbside is friendlier, and everyone knows what it means. Oh, but anyway, and then Google Ads is gonna show more overlay to load more ads in your shopping results. That sound like fun, Jim.
Yeah, why not? No, well, sure. I mean, it's real estate, just put ads in. How to say this? I love Google Shopping. Honest to goodness, I love Google Shopping. It's driving great amounts of traffic to a couple of my e-com clients. There's nothing sacred in the SERPs there. There's nothing sacred in the SERPs at regular Google. So while I would rather not have ads there, polluting my chances of getting the click, they ought to be there. Why not?
Well, here's a good thing. At least it's under a show more button now.
Yeah.
So it doesn't show unless someone tries to. So it doesn't automatically push your link down, which is good.
We're not paying to be here. We're getting in here because Google's created the space for us to be there. So if my client was paying to be there, like paying Google money to be there, I'd be remarkably pissed.
Yeah, but we're not. And it's
But we're
not
not.
adding another row, so that's okay.
Yeah.
Here's Google is testing promoting the Google Maps app in the desktop interface of Google Maps. And
That
I
makes
say this every
sense.
time I bring up Google Maps, it's just been a disaster lately. But hopefully this will be helpful.
Well, here's the pro
I don't
here's the thing.
know.
When you're running Google Maps in Chrome on your phone, you're wasting resources. And your phone's only got so much, right? You're seriously crimping resources. You're running Chrome and the memory load Google Maps puts on Chrome while it's running. Of course, they want you to use a special app in the mobile environment.
Yeah, but this is desktop. So I don't know, it's fine. I mean, it's just a little odd because it already detects whether you're on desktop anyway or you're on mobile anyway.
Oh, this is integrating your results with what's happening on your phone. That's what the QR code's all about.
Oh, gotcha.
So yeah,
Okay.
so it's keeping your desktop and your phone in line with each other. That makes a lot more sense.
Okay. I was wondering why they had a QR code, but that makes sense.
Yeah,
So,
absolutely. It's to educate your mobile device on what you've been up to on your desktop. Dwarf porn? I never bought this.
well, it looks like we have come to the end of our grid. Since we're out of time, can I mention one thing about tariffs, Jim? One helpful thing for people.
Sure.
So the tariffs that have been implemented. Oh, did you hear, by the way, real quick, that we've tariffed the island of penguins,
Believe
where
me,
no humans
being a
live?
country outside of the United States that's dependent on trade, I'm absolutely aware of everything you guys are
So,
tariffed.
for people who are not aware, we tariffed an island of penguins. There's no humans that live there. Zero humans live there. Anyway, but one thing that people should be aware is if it's already here. Some people, like car dealers, Ford and GM, are offering below invoice employee pricing on buying one. Once the items are in the port or coming in, those are going to be tariffs. They're going to be way more expensive. They're talking about cars like $15,000 more per car. So if you're in the need of something like a car, a big purchase item, if it's in the stores right now, many of them are going to be offering special pricing, and you might want to go to the stores this week or to the car lot or to whatever you have a big ticket item would be at. And go ahead and purchase it while it's on the lot because the pricing is not increased if it's already in the US and it's already here. If it's coming in or it's sitting on the port right now, within 12 hours, all those prices go up. So as the items are removed from the locations now, they'll be replaced with the more expensive items. I just want people to understand that their prices are about to go up significantly because we tariffed most of the world, anywhere from 10% to 50%. Also, one quick note of factoid so people understand. The president said that these are reciprocal to what the countries were doing to us, but nobody has been able to figure out where the numbers come from. The numbers are basically made up. There's a rumor, Jim, that they did it with ChatGPT, but I don't know if that rumor is true. Just so people are aware that their prices are about to go up on big ticket items, and you're going to want to get that while it's in the store right now.
Americans, your prices are going to go up on everything. It's across the board. Nothing is going to be spared. Your president has tariffed every import coming into the country. And then the Oval Office is starting to make carve outs. But the default is everything is being hit with a tariff, which means everything is going to get more expensive. Now, that may be from 10% to 25%, as far up to 50% on some goods, especially if you're looking at goods coming from, say, Vietnam. It's a tax on the American consumer. Yeah. And apparently, according to Bloomberg, it's the largest tax that's ever been imposed on the American consumer, three times the size of the one that was imposed to pay for World War II.
Yes. And to give just a local quick story, a friend here is a scientist, a chemist who works with the water department here on making sure our water is clean, also seeing like what diseases may be here by checking the water systems, things like that. And his price for one of their tools that they need went up 60%, because although the item is tariffed, so are all the things that make the item tariffed. So they just went to purchase it and it's 60% more expensive. And then there's ozone that they need to help clean the water. And he's not even sure right now where they're going to get the money for that, because that also has gone up. I think it was 50 or 60%.
Your tax dollars at Smirk.
Well, also so people realize that the tariffing doesn't just happen on the item itself, but the items that go into the item to be made. So that's why cars might go up $15,000 a piece on average.
Indeed.
So, yeah. Anyway, just want to let people know to get out there and get the stuff before it becomes really expensive, because a lot of people are living paycheck to paycheck.
Again, I'm outside of America, and at this point, you know what? Sorry, folks. You know, 30 of you voted for this, 30 of you didn't vote for it, and 30 of you didn't vote at all. Eat the cost, folks, because it's killing the economy in my neighborhood. And I got a lot of people who I care about who are going to be out of work because of this. And it was unnecessary. And it's unfortunate.
It is.
I feel terrible for what's about to happen to the American consumer. But at the same time, it's going to get much, much worse because we're about to hit you with reciprocal tariffs even back, which will make the cost of goods from your country much more expensive. And we're just going to stop buying it, which means they won't need many of you as workers anymore. This didn't have to be this way. But it is. Anyway, yeah, it's unfortunate. It's wonked a system that was literally creating golden goose eggs for all of us. And now it's just going to make goose eggs. C'est la vie. And on that sad note, we got to go. We've gone around the clock in end time.
I said it was going to show, so you wouldn't have a lot of time to comment.
before we go on the way out, I want to seriously pimp a interview we did with Mikkel Demib-Svensson, one of the legendary SEOs. It's going to be part of one of our shows coming up soon, and we're also going to put it up as a standalone interview. When you see it, listen for it. Mikkel is an extraordinary person. Just come up with a SEO masterclass. Incredible amount of work went into it. And just talking to Mikkel and his history in the industry and his opinions on much of the stuff that's happening now. Delightful interview. Really enjoyed the conversation. Okay, friends, we've gone all the way around the clock. So you've been listening to Webcology, recorded live to podcast on the 3rd of April, 2025. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Christine Jackins from Sites Without Walls. We want to thank our sponsors, Wix Studio and Audience Key. We also want to thank our producers, Ricky and Brasco, and Darren and Dan Brandy in the front office there. Be kind to each other. Check your websites. Get a technical audit. It's the beginning of the second quarter, for goodness sake. Get it done. Rank well, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.